We're going to go ahead and open up. We've been going through the story of David. And most of you know David was the greatest king in Israel's history. And what we've been doing is going kind of through the history of David's life. We've been studying how God moved and worked in and through David. As I have said every week, this is not really a study of David. It's a study of David's God. Because David is not a perfect man. We don't look to him and say, let's just be like David. We all know, if you've read the story of David, he did some major mess ups. But what we can see is how God moved in and through David's life. So today, I want to do a quick review, and I'm going to hit just a couple of nuggets of stories. Last week, when we finished, of course, David was the one who God anointed to be the next king of Israel. Saul was the king, and Saul acted wickedly. He acted without faith. And so God designated David to be the next king. And we find Saul becoming angry, becoming irrational, and ultimately last week we saw him go on a murderous rampage. And we talked about how does a man who originally was chosen by God to be a king end up so angry, so lost, and so murderous. It doesn't happen overnight. It happens because we allow our heart to go hard. It happens because when we sin, we don't repent. It happens because we walk away from God. So now we've got this story of Saul, who has been killing, pursuing David. And now we pick up the story in 1 Samuel chapters 23 and 24, as we find David fleeing from Saul. So I'm going to give you three quick, just kind of snapshots. So the first thing that we see in the David story in 1 Samuel 23, 14, with Saul in pursuit, David flees to the wilderness. I want everybody just to say that one word, wilderness. Wilderness. What comes into your mind when you think of the wilderness? Anybody? What?
Bears.
I like that. That wasn't what was in my mind, but I like that.
Dry, hot.
Dry, hot. Unknown.
Wild.
Wild. Yeah. How about uncomfortable? You know? I mean, I remember growing up as a kid, we would, you know, my dad got us a tent, and we would go and we would camp out. And this was not in the days of modern amenities for tents. And we just had, you know, old sleeping bags that we would sleep on the ground, and I wouldn't sleep. It would be hard. It would be uncomfortable. And I remember thinking, I don't much like camping. Camping wasn't a lot of fun because it's hard. It's uncomfortable. It's hot or it's cold. And it's just not. I'd rather be in an air-conditioned home. I'd rather have a cushioned bed. And then when I got married, Jennifer's family, they had a pop-up camper. And I thought, now this is camping. You know, got a nice bed. Can kind of control climate a little bit. And then I know people who have bought RVs, you know, with the pop-out sides. And I was watching this video yesterday of these people that were camping, and they had satellite dish, and they're watching TV, and they're playing games. And I was sitting there going, that's not camping. As David seeks to escape Saul, he goes into the wilderness, and he goes to a place called En Gedi. Goes to several places, but mostly it's an area over near, if you have ever looked at the map of Israel, it's over near the Dead Sea, and as Brother Al said, it's dry, it's barren, and near the Dead Sea, all of a sudden, it rises up with rock walls and caves, and there's not much growth there, and, you know, goats or sheep might run free, but it's just a rough and dangerous area with hyenas and other wild animals, and you can't control the climate. It's just not a great place. But this is where David goes to get away from Saul, because he's got to run. He's got to hide. And in 1 Samuel 23, 14, it says, and David remained in the strongholds in the wilderness, in the hill country of the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day, but God did not give him into his hand. every day in the wilderness. And we, if you go through it, you read that there are days when Saul grabbed an army of 600 men, and he is hunting David down. And they would go down a side of a mountain, and David and his men would go around another side. And then they'd go this way, and David would go to another side of the mountain or get into another cave. And they were living with their lives constantly under the threat of being caught and being killed. And so the question, why would God allow that? David is the chosen one who is going to be the next king. Saul is now on a murderous rampage, and yet instead of just striking Saul down, David spends the next, we don't know exactly how long, the next 10 or 12 years hiding, fleeing, escaping in the wilderness. So I did a lot of thinking on the wilderness this week. I just want to give you a couple thoughts, and then we'll go to our next one. But there are three big wilderness stories in the Bible. Remember the story of Moses? He leads the people of God out of Egypt, and they cross the Red Sea, and they're headed to the Promised Land. But they struggled to really believe God. They struggled with rebellion. They struggled with idolatry. And what ends up happening is they spend 40 years, and the scripture uses this phrase, wandering in the wilderness. Wandering in the wilderness. Then the other, I'll come back to that in a second. The next wilderness story is David spending 8, 10, 12 years fleeing from Saul in the wilderness. And then in the New Testament, three of the Gospels talk about the temptations of Jesus. Where did Jesus go after his baptism? Into the wilderness, to be tempted of the devil. 40 days fasting to be tempted by the devil. Three times in the stories of perhaps the three greatest men in the scriptures, Moses, David, and Jesus, they are led into the wilderness. Must be that God uses the wilderness. Must be that God has a plan for what happens in the wilderness. Well, what we see with the people of God back in Moses' day, they had come out of Egypt, and in Egypt they had bought into the false gods of Egypt. They really didn't trust Yahweh. And so as Moses is leading them out, many of them were complaining. They were fussing, saying, why don't we go back to Egypt where everything was, what, comfortable? Where everything was, we were slaves, but we were taken care of. Why would we be out here in the wilderness as if God couldn't see them through? And an entire generation ends up dying in the wilderness. But another generation is formed that knew this, that God saw them through. And that even though they had gone through difficult times and hard times, they had learned not to trust in themselves or not to trust in the old ways, but to trust in their God. David, he goes through 8, 10, 12 years fleeing from Saul. His life in danger. And what do we see? That God refines him. God works in his life. God provides for him. And ultimately, he comes out on the other side. The wilderness is a place of trials. It's a place of temptation. It's a place of hardship. And the reality is, even if you never go camping, even if you never rough it out in the forest, you're going to go through the wilderness. Every one of you are going to go through seasons in your life where things don't seem to work out, where it seems like you're either in danger or you're being tested or you're being tried and it's not comfortable and it's hard. And what we normally do when we start to go through the wilderness, we want to ask the question, where's God? Why would God do this to me? Well, if God didn't protect Jesus from the wilderness, and if God didn't protect David from a season in the wilderness, and if God didn't protect Moses from a time in the wilderness, why would he do that for you? See, God uses the wilderness. He uses the times when he takes away our security. He takes away our comfort. He takes away everything that makes us feel safe and secure to where we only have one thing to do, and that's to depend on God. And many of us have never learned to utterly depend on God. I want you to just think for a second about your life. Are you going through some difficult times? How many of you can think of a season of your life, maybe you're going through it now, where you've wondered, where's God? Why hasn't God heard my prayers? Well, in my own life, the three most significant breakthroughs, spiritual breakthroughs in my life came after seasons of wilderness. Someone that you love dies, and you're hurting. Someone that you care about wounds you or betrays you, and life feels unfair. Maybe you go through a season where you lose your job and you're wondering, how am I going to make it? Maybe you blew it, and maybe you sinned, and maybe you end up suffering the consequences for your sin, and you're isolated, and you're just thinking, God, where are you? But if you keep seeking, if you keep looking, if you keep trusting, what God does is He uses the wilderness time to deepen our faith. He uses the wilderness time so that we will learn to trust in Him. Give you a second story. This one's real quick. This is actually 1 Samuel 22, 1 and 2. I just want you to see this one. 1 Samuel 22, verses 1 and 2. This is when David leaves Jonathan. They've made the covenant. And where does David find himself? David departed from there and escaped to what? The cave. Isn't that a great place just to hang out? I don't mind visiting Mammoth Cave, but when I go, there's a tour. They flip on the lights. Everything's really pretty safe. But imagine that all you can do is hide out. It's in an era where you don't have flashlights. It's in an era where, you know, you're just escaping. And David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. And everyone who was in distress, everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was bitter in soul gathered to him. And he became commander over them. And there were with him about 400 men. Now, if you've got other translations, I'm not going to take the time to do it. But I want you to, this is one of these things that those of us who teach, we love these little things. Okay, everyone who was in what? Distress. And everyone who was in what? And everyone who was, you know what a lot of the old translations say? Everyone who was discontented. You like that? The D's, the three D's. They were in distress, in debt, and discontented. And all those people gathered to David. Well, that's kind of interesting. David's just trying to get away. And other people turn to him who are in distress, who are in debt, and who are discontented. And I was just kind of pondering that one this week, too. And I thought, isn't that where God normally starts with us? We don't start our relationship with God because we're on top of the world and everything's great. We start a real relationship with God because we're hurting and we're broken, because we're down, we're in distress, we're in debt, we're discontented, and we have nowhere else to turn, and we turn to God. And this is what happened with David. This was the beginning of his real leadership. Is God sent to him those that were hurting and those that were broken. And that's what church is, by the way, guys. It's a gathering of the hurting. It's a gathering of the broken. And then when God restores us, we become the ones who can shepherd and help the others who are hurting and broken and in distress. We're not a place where everyone's got it all together. We're a place where we need God. After fleeing from Saul, David begins to rebuild his life with others who are in distress. How many of you can relate to that? How many of you have gone through a distinct season of brokenness, of distress, despair, and despondency? See, that's where God gets hold of us. Do you remember the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount? Jesus gives us what are called the Beatitudes. In the Beatitudes, it starts with, looking for where I've got it in my notes, it says, it starts with, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. The poor in spirit and the mourning. If you really want God to move in your life, it starts with us laying down our pretense. It starts with us recognizing, I don't have it all together. I need forgiveness. I need hope. By the way, just I read something about this Asbury movement, and I thought it was really insightful. One of the older men who was there, and he was talking about what God was doing in these college students. He said, we are in a season in our country where some of the greatest issues are anxiety and depression. And he said the hallmarks of what they're seeing up there at Asbury is those that are anxious are finding peace, and those that are in despair are finding hope. Isn't that what most of us are longing for? We want some peace. We want hope. Those are found in Jesus. But what happens is we run everywhere trying to solve it. But ultimately, when we're broken, when we're hurting, we look up. So Jesus says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Today, as we talk about the wilderness, and we talk about the discontented, those in distress, this is a call to us. Many times God will lead us through a hard time, a difficult time, that we might learn to trust in Him, that we might learn to turn to Him. So I'm going to give you real quickly the third story I wanted to give you today. And this one is just almost embarrassing in its honesty. There's some things that you go, oh, we won't talk about that in church, but we're going to talk about something really awkward in church. So David, this is in 1 Samuel 24, 1 through 7. Here we are, David again is in the wilderness of En Gedi. This is in verse 1. David, Saul returned from following the Philistines. He was told, behold, David is in the wilderness of En Gedi. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel and went to seek David and his men in front of the Wild Goats Rock. I don't know where the Wild Goats Rock is, but it sounds like it's a pretty barren place. So Saul's got 3,000 men, and David's got his battered band of misfits. And he came to the sheepfolds, by the way, where there was a cave, and Saul went in to relieve himself. What's Saul doing? He's going potty. You know? So, you know, this is, Saul's the king. He wants a little privacy. You know, there's no interstate, you know, rest areas. And he sees a cave, and he decides to go in, and apparently, again, this is, he's not just doing number one, he's doing number two. And it says, now David and his men were sitting in the innermost parts of the cave, and the men of David said to him, here is the day of which the Lord said to you, behold, I will give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it shall seem good to you. It's like Saul has disrobed himself, he's looking the other way. I mean, you guys get the picture. Saul's defenseless, and David has been running and fleeing from this murderous man, and now's his chance. What would you do? What would you do? If you're a warrior like David, you more than likely, the normal thing you do is you'd kill Saul, and you'd stop the pursuit so that you finally have stopped this evil, wicked, murderous man from chasing after you, and you would be free. But then David arose and stealthily cut off a corner of Saul's robe And afterward, David's heart struck him because he had cut off a corner of Saul's robe. He said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord." That's not the Lord God, but my master, my king, the Lord's anointed. "To put up my hand against him, seeing he is" who? "The Lord's anointed." I mean, think about what David is saying here. This murderous man, this man that's ungodly, this man who deserves to die, I'm not going to strike him down. Why not? Because God chose him and God set him apart. So I'm not going to do it. And what he's basically saying to God is this, and saying to his men is, I am not going to lift my hands against the one whom God raised up, even though he's gone off the rails. I'm going to leave it in God's hands. And I'm going to wait on God. How many of us have made drastic, horrible mistakes when we tried to take something into our own hands, when we tried to fix all of our problems and we cut corners or we did something ungodly because that, well, I just had to. I had no choice. I just had to do it. And David resists the temptation to kill the man that's trying to kill him. And he says, I'm not going to lift my hands against the Lord's anointed because he's waiting on God. You know, there is a time to be a man of action and there's a time to wait. And all of David's men were saying, do it, do it, do it. Now's the time. And David said, no. Because he's the man that God chose. I will not lift my hand. I will have to wait on the Lord. The big message throughout all of this, I've talked about the wilderness. And there's, by the way, there's 15 different stories of David that take place in the wilderness. I doubt we'll do all of them. But one of the themes that comes out of the Psalms, when David talks about the wilderness, he also talks about another word. It's called refuge. He sought refuge in the cave. Well, initially in David's writings, it would talk about refuge being a place of escape. But then David makes a shift, and he starts referring to the Lord as what? My refuge. My refuge. The refuge was no longer a place. The refuge was his God. And I just wanted to ask the question today, where's your refuge? Who is your refuge? Have you learned to surrender it to God? Have you learned to lay your life down and to take your hands off of it and say, Lord, my life is in your hands. As we wrap up today, I'm going to give you two verses. These both come from Psalm 31. By the way, anybody know who wrote Psalm 31? David. So Psalm 31, verse 1, begins, in you, O Lord, say it with me, do I take refuge. Let me never be put to shame, and in your righteousness deliver me. God, I'm not going to do it myself, but I am looking to you. Then, just skipping down, we could do the whole psalm, but we won't. Verses 14 and 15, David says, but I trust in you, O Lord. I say, you are my God, and here we come. My times are in your hand. I love that phrase. My times are in your hand. Did you know that your life is in God's hands? That he knows the number of your days. He is your protector. He is your defender. He is the one who will watch over you if you will surrender to him. You know, I've told these stories before, and I'm in a different season of my life, but when I was a young man and I was working in the street ministry, there were time after time that we would go to minister to street guys. You'd go under a bridge, you'd go to a tramp camp, you'd go wherever. And I had guns pulled on me, I had knives put at my side, people put knives, I had guy put his hands on my neck, people threatened to kill me. And I still remember the day when someone said, why don't you cry out to your God and see if he'll help? And I thought, that's a really good idea. And I did. Simple prayer, God, help. And within a minute, the guy's hands were off me, and I was free. Why? Because my times are in His hands. Many of us are living our own lives. Many of us are trying to manufacture and do everything we can to make our life work instead of learning to take our hands off, to endure the wilderness by trusting in Him. If you're going through a hard time right now, I could give you advice on lots of ways. You know, here's what you can do to find a job. Here's what you can. But the most important thing is turn your eyes to Jesus. Turn your eyes to Him. Look to Him. Wait on Him. Trust in Him. Make Him your refuge. So I'm going to just close this with an invitation to you. Whatever you're going through, whatever hardship you're going through, instead of looking at the problem that you find in your hands, just figuratively let go of it and look to Him. Let go, trust in Him, cast your cares on Him because He cares for you. Your times are in His hands. But there is a surrender that we have to do. And so what I'm asking you to do today is to surrender. Surrender. Who's your refuge? Him. Who controls your life? He does. Who is your boss? Who is your provider? Who is your defender? He is.